Babalwa Mahlaveli stood before South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, her voice steady despite the weight of unspeakable loss. Her father had been murdered during apartheid, 43 wounds, face burned with acid, right hand severed. Yet her words carried no rage, only a profound confusion. We want to forgive, but we don't know who to forgive. Here lies the paradox many of us face. The desire to release our pain, coupled with the bewildering uncertainty of how to actually do it. Archbishop Desmond Tutu doesn't write about forgiveness from ivory towers. He writes from the smell of alcohol on his father's breath, the fear in his mother's eyes during domestic violence, the helpless rage of a child watching harm unfold. Even with a Nobel Peace Prize and global recognition, he admits forgiving his father remained profoundly difficult. This vulnerability matters because it reveals a crucial truth. Forgiveness isn't about spiritual perfection, but human survival. Forgiveness isn't a mystical gift reserved for saints. It's a learnable skill, a deliberate path through suffering that transforms victims into survivors and pain into purpose. When we refuse to forgive, we imprison ourselves in resentment. Medical research confirms ancient wisdom. Chronic unforgiveness correlates with higher rates of depression, anxiety, and physical illness. Our bodies literally bear the burden of our grudges. Forgiveness becomes possible when we recognize our shared humanity, that we are all flawed beings who have caused and received harm. True humility means acknowledging that, given different circumstances, we might have made similar mistakes. When Tutu sat with death row inmates, torturers, and child soldiers, he saw wounded humanity mirroring his own capacity for both darkness and light. Forgiveness doesn't pretend harm didn't occur. Like Christ showing his wounds after resurrection, healing requires bringing painful experiences into truth's fierce light. The Xhosa phrase for asking forgiveness, Nditsel Uksolo, translates as "I ask for peace," revealing forgiveness's true purpose, creating peace between people and within ourselves. Bassam Araman co-founded Combatants for Peace, dedicating himself to Israeli-Palestinian nonviolence. When an Israeli soldier shot his 10-year-old daughter, Abir, his choice to remain committed to peace rather than seeking revenge required immense strength, not weakness. 100 former Israeli soldiers built a memorial garden at her school, a testament to what forgiveness makes possible. Forgiveness doesn't subvert justice. In Northern Ireland and South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, perpetrators faced accountability and revealed their actions in painful detail. Forgiveness requires absolute truth about violations. We must name our hurts openly. I am betrayed. I am in pain. I am angry. While we may never forget, we can choose not to let it control us. Linda Beale, whose daughter Amy was murdered in South Africa, chose to work with her daughter's killers through reconciliation programs. She openly acknowledges, "Some days I have to forgive them all over again." Forgiveness isn't a one-time event, but a continuing practice, possible regardless of whether the perpetrator shows remorse. It's about our healing, not their redemption. When hurt, we face a critical fork. The revenge cycle begins when we reject our pain, blame others, and deny our grief, leading us to reject our shared humanity and demand vengeance. Each act creates new victims seeking retribution, family feuds spanning generations, conflicts persisting for centuries. The forgiveness cycle requires tremendous courage. We accept our pain and grief, moving through denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance until reaching a profound realization. Perpetrators often act from their own deep wounds. This understanding doesn't excuse their actions, but provides context. By accepting our vulnerability, we recognize theirs, learning to separate the person from their actions. Jeffrey carried the secret of sexual abuse for 18 years, leaving him angry, untrusting, and questioning his sanity. Only when he shared his story with his future wife did healing begin. Though telling didn't immediately fix everything, he describes it as finding the key to a dungeon he'd been locked in for years. Choosing the right listener matters. Ideally, you tell the person who harmed you, allowing profound reclamation of dignity. If there's no one you trust, writing an unsent letter can lessen its power. Dan and Lynn Wagner lost their daughters in a car accident. After the driver's release from prison, they contacted her. Remarkably, she now joins them when they speak publicly about forgiveness, demonstrating that telling one's story is essential to healing. After telling our stories, we must name our hurt, identifying the specific emotions caused by what happened. Unacknowledged pain festers like an undrained abscess, eventually rupturing and affecting every area of our lives. Clara Walsh's family never discussed her sister Kim's traumatic death. Without a framework for grieving, Clara developed severe anxiety, nightmares, and physical symptoms. Her unprocessed grief led to a decade of fear, substance abuse, depression, and the end of her marriage. Grief isn't limited to death, but occurs whenever we lose something precious: trust, faith, innocence. It helps us cope through various stages: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. These stages aren't linear. We cycle through them with no fixed timeline. Denial initially protects us, but prolonged denial leads to self-destruction. Anger is natural, but imprisons us when we remain locked in it. Acceptance, recognizing things will never be as they were, ultimately allows us to journey forward. M422 shares her experience following her employee Angela's murder, revealing the complex web of grief, guilt, fury, and fear she experienced. When her daughter received trauma therapy, the therapist validated her feelings without judgment, creating safety for healing. We cannot truly bear pain alone. We heal together, and when we share the burden of our brokenness, we find we are less broken. Kia Sher lost her husband and daughter in the 2008 Mumbai terrorist attacks. Upon seeing the surviving terrorist's image, she immediately thought, "Father, forgive them. They know not what they do." Despite her family's shock, she knew forgiveness was essential. "There is already enough hate," she said. The words, "I forgive you," are simple but difficult to genuinely mean. Real forgiveness manifests as feeling lighter, peaceful, or no longer wishing harm on others. Ben Bosinger endured extreme violence from his father for years, carrying rage that poisoned his relationships. One day, seeing his aging father's humanity while they both admired motorcycles, forgiveness spontaneously happened. The magic didn't happen to him, Ben realized. The magic happened to me. Everyone needs forgiveness. There is no unforgivable act. Kelly Connor struggled with self-forgiveness after causing an accidental death. Though forgiven by the victim's family, she battled decades of self-loathing until helping others through sharing her experience. Self-forgiveness requires distinguishing between appropriate guilt, "I've done something bad," and toxic shame, "I am bad." Shame thrives in secrecy, but heals in community and connection. Forgiveness isn't the end. We must choose whether to renew or release relationships. Linda Beale formed a bond with her daughter Amy's murderers, who now work for the Amy Beale Foundation, transforming tragedy into shared purpose. Renewal requires accepting our contribution to conflicts. Ubuntu philosophy suggests we participate in creating society's desperation, not from guilt, but recognizing interconnectedness. Dan and Lynn Wagner met Lisa upon her release, intending closure. Instead, they hugged her. Lisa's living amends meant sharing her experience to prevent others from taking lives. When renewal isn't possible, release becomes essential, freeing yourself from victimhood without wishing ill. Rwanda's Gacaca courts showed how restorative justice heals nations. Unlike retributive justice, where punishment answers to the state, restorative justice views crime as harm against people, requiring dialogue and reconciliation. Many transform suffering into meaning. Kia Sher established One Life Alliance after losing family to terrorism. Bassam Araman co-founded Combatants for Peace. Creating a forgiving world begins at home, with children, spouses, neighbors, strangers. Your wounds don't define you. How you heal them does.